It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, I want to wish everyone a happy 4th of July weekend. You know, I was reflecting on the 4th of July and Independence Day, July 4th. And really, as an American, I'm so proud and blessed to be born in the United States of America. In my humble opinion, the greatest country in the world. And every now and then, I don't think we realize the freedoms that we have. And, you know, we should all reflect this weekend while we're hanging out with our friends and family, the importance of freedom to do what you want to do and to really feel how fortunate we are as Americans. This weekend, we have really a wonderful lady. We did a little promotion on Facebook. We call Amalia Duarte a relentless volunteer, a woman that's been giving back for many years. And we're going to explore her journey of giving back, her roots, her parents from the Dominican Republic. We're going to talk about their impact on her life. We're going to talk about what lit the fire in her to decide to really be such a relentless volunteer. And also, we're not a political show, but she was recently a groundbreaker. She is now the chairperson of the Democratic Party here in Morris County. We're going to talk about that as well. Amalia, good morning.
Good morning, Todd, and thanks for having me on today, this 4th of July weekend. Happy 4th of July to everyone who's listening. Yeah, it's a terrific weekend, and like you, as a first-generation American, I truly, deeply appreciate being in this country and all the freedoms that sometimes we take for granted in our country.
You know, Amalia, when we were walking in today to the studio here, I saw your wonderful shirt. You know, yes. I was running like a lunatic, like usual, getting ready. I told you before I do the Sunday show, I got to get a little workout and get the blood going. Yeah. And I have nothing, candidly. I'm so proud to be an American, but I don't think I have something like that to wear. But I love the shirt. So, Amalia, you know, this show is the journey of giving back. Mm-hmm. And I always like to explore. It's not a deposition.
I get nervous, Todd.
Like, oh my God, I need my own counsel. No, but I mean, I always like to.
I can't plead the fifth, can I?
You can. I mean, here, United States of America, you can take the fifth. You can plead it. But no, I always want to understand where people came from, their roots. And in a little bit of the intro, we talked about, you know, your parents. I know that your dad is now in heaven, your mom, God bless her, still with us. But where were your parents from?
Yeah, so just to start off there, my folks are from the Dominican Republic, which is the island of Hispaniola. It's half of the island, well, actually two-thirds of the island. The other part is Haiti. So they're both, you know, they're generations back, families are from there, although not to get into the ancestry story, but before that, Spain and apparently France and Italy, so it's an interesting mix. But anyway, they're from the DR, as everybody calls it. And my dad was a doctor back there, and my mom was very young when they first met. Actually, she was 18, and my dad was 27. That's a whole nother story. But he was a doctor. But it was at the time when the island was ruled by a real ruthless dictator. Trujillo was his name. And there were no personal freedoms like we have here. There was no democracy, obviously. And my dad made the decision after they got married soon thereafter that he wanted to come to the United States. He had friends who he'd gone to medical school with who had left and come to the U.S. You know, and this happens a lot of times where you have these exile communities that come to the U.S. seeking freedom. And so back in the 1950s, they did get married back on the island. The story of my parents is that they were apparently at a dance or a party and that he spied my mother across the room. And that was it.
Really?
You know, the old love at first sight.
Now, what does your mother say about that first
I think it's a true story. She's quite a pretty lady. You know, she's now, God bless, 85. She'll be 86 this summer. But she's a wonderful person, very vivacious, fun to be around. And so I believe the story. But anyway, the two of them met. they, you know, back in those days, you didn't waste any time. You got married pretty quickly. And so they got married and then made that decision. And he was able to get out of the country. And he had a sister living in New York City at the time with her husband. And so he moved there first after they were married. And then my mom came over. It took her a while to get out of the country to get the proper documentation. It wasn't the easiest to leave.
So, Amalia, you know, once again, on the 4th of July, I mean, we take these freedoms, you know, for granted. Yep. And you were telling us, you know, the world that, you know, your parents were living in is much different than the United States of America. It is the land of the free, the home of the brave. And so your dad came first to the United States, then your mom. So where were you raised?
Yeah, so the way things evolved, so my dad was a doctor, but then he had to go through, you know, getting board certified and passing all those exams to practice medicine here.
What area of medicine?
He was a psychiatrist, yeah. So they started in New York after my mom was able to get out, and my oldest sister is a honeymoon baby, so she came over as well.
You know, ironically, I just went to...
So do you like this so far? Love at first sight, honeymoon baby.
You know, my wife and I were blessed with two young boys, but we went to Turks and Caicos recently. Yeah. We had been there on our honeymoon, and some people were questioning, well, our little guy Alexander, they're trying to do the mathematics on it. There's a bit of an investigation, but I don't believe that's the case. But there's nothing wrong with the honeymoon baby. God bless. So... I understand you were born, I'm sorry, you were raised in Summit?
Yeah, so anyway, so the journey of my folks was they started in New York. They went to the Wisconsin, of all places, in Milwaukee. My mom talks a lot about how she saw her first snowfall there. And imagine, you know, this couple from the Caribbean all of a sudden in Wisconsin. And then they went to Oregon, which is where I was born, and my other sister. Well, there's three sisters, one brother. Went to Illinois. We crisscrossed the country. Went to Illinois, and then when we were in Illinois, my dad took the exams to practice medicine in California and New Jersey. And he would talk about how he found out that he passed in New Jersey first. He later learned that he also passed in California and so made plans to come to New Jersey. And he says that, you know what, if he'd found out about California, we might have ended up there. So we might not be having this interview. Things could have gone a different way.
Well, let's hope that was still a blessing. We'll see how it goes. We got a lot of time left the show.
Anyway, so moved to New Jersey and grew up in Summit, New Jersey. Started, you know, went to Catholic school there and St. Teresa's Church and really had just a wonderful upbringing. You know, it was back in the 70s where you'd ride your bike all over town with your friends and have a good time and you just had to be home for dinner.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Springfield, which was the next town right there in Union County. And I always think about the days growing up in Springfield. I have some great friends. Maybe they're listening on Facebook right now. A few shout outs to the Chisholm Chickens and some of my friends. But yeah, we used to play all day and really even at night, you know, my mom would normally scream, come on in. But it wasn't like today where the state police, there'd be helicopters out. If your kids aren't in before it gets dark, you know, the world, you know, is a lot different than it was growing up.
Yeah.
Just the reality of it all. So when you were growing up, your dad was a psychiatrist. Your mom, was your mom working? Was she involved in school? What was going on with that?
Yeah, so she never worked. You know, when they first came to this country, she worked briefly for a few months. But she, you know, had grown up pretty comfortably, and he was a doctor, so she was really didn't have to work. Plus, she had four kids, so that's a full-time job in itself.
And my wife is listening.
Okay,
believe me, that's hard work.
That's
putting up with me too. Listen, not easy as well. She's raising three kids.
I won't comment on that.
A lot of my friends would. Yeah. But no, that's wonderful. No, I've realized, you know, your mom was raising kids. It's a lot of work. So when you were young, were your parents doing some things to kind of already give back? I mean, how did you start to see that the seed, because on the journey of giving back, I always like to explore, if you'll permit, like, you know, what were your parents about in terms of their understanding of the importance of not just me, but also the we mentality?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my folks were always involved with volunteerism and different groups. And, you know, my mom would help out in the schools. And I can remember When I was young, my brother went to public school. The girls went to Catholic school. That's a whole different conversation. But I do remember my mom would volunteer with the library, and they'd do this inventory at the end of each year. And she would bring me in, and we'd go through all the shelves and make sure that the books were in the right place and that they were there. So that was sort of a hands-on example of you know, you'd spend your afternoon giving back to the school. But more importantly, they were very involved with and were founding members of, talked about how they came from the Dominican Republic. Public, and there was a group of doctors that they were friends with, and so they founded this Dominican Medical Society, La Sociedad Médica Dominica, and it was a group of doctors and the wives. They had the Rama Femenina.
Oh, your Spanish,
which was the well, yeah. I'm better at listening than actually speaking. I need to practice more because we're planning a big family trip to the DR next year.
Nice.
Yeah, but so I gotta get the language going again in my head. But anyway, so they founded this organization with friends of theirs, and it was both a social, organization to get together for parties, et cetera. But it was also, they would do educational workshops and conferences and things like that. And my dad at one point was the president of that organization. My mom headed up the ladies auxiliary, the Rama Femenina. And that was a real example of how they, you have a lot of times people have ideas, but they don't necessarily aren't able to put it into action and make it a reality. And they had an idea, they worked with their friends, they collaborated, and it became something that continued for many, many years and that they were very deeply involved with. So that was an example. Then another example, and I played a lot of sports growing up, as did, the whole family. But I do remember my brother was on a baseball team, and my dad had them over for a practice one day, or after practice one day to the house. And I think they had a barbecue or something. But anyway, they're in the backyard. And I could hear them chanting because the team to beat was the Hurricanes. And I could hear them chanting, "We're going to beat the Hurricanes. We're going to beat the Hurricanes." And so again, here's my dad. He's a physician and obviously a very busy man, but like so many people, he found time to give back, with my brother and coach sports, and he loved baseball.
Was he a coach of the team?
He was a coach.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thinking about my late dad. He was an extraordinary lawyer, but he was a wonderful, wonderful person. And one year, don't ask me how, but my dad was like one of the assistant coaches. And this is going back in like the early 70s. And my dad would be the only dad who would show up. He would have the three-piece suit. He would have the watch fob. And he would throw a batting practice.
Oh, I love it.
He would throw a batting practice. But the beauty of my dad was he always wanted everybody to play. It didn't matter if you were like Babe Ruth or some kid who could barely tie his cleats to get on the field. You were playing and you were going to play. Yeah. Didn't matter what inning it was. If it was your bat, you're getting up to bat. But I remember my dad was enthusiastic as well. And the kids loved my dad. Didn't matter if we won or lost. We would go to Dairy Queen on Route 22. So my dad was a big hit. So when you're talking about your dad and his enthusiasm, and there's no substitute, you can't phone that in.
Absolutely.
Either you're in or you're out, but like you're blessed because you saw it firsthand, right?
Yeah.
So that made an impact on you because how many years ago? So that was a while ago.
Oh my gosh. This is probably 40 years ago.
Yeah. So it made it, and this is something too where your parents set an example for you in life and you don't realize at the time, but kids do watch and it made an impact on you because we're talking about it, which you're talking about your dad, your late dad. I'm talking about my late dad.
Yeah.
Because it impacted your life in really a wonderful way. So let me ask.
I have to say, as parents, right? You don't realize how much your kids are absorbing and watching everything you do. And you really absolutely, what your behaviors, you're going to see it 20 years later.
Yeah, good or bad, right?
No, good or bad. I mean, like here's a funny thing. I always, when my kids were growing up and, my son could care less about shopping. I have two kids, a boy and a girl. My daughter enjoys shopping, not a huge shopper, but she enjoys it. But I would also, let's go to the Macy's bargain basement or we don't need to spend $600 on a prom dress. And now she's an adult And she's very proud when she tells me, oh, Mom, I just got this bargain, whatever it was. And so I think, okay, you learned that lesson, you know, and trying to, you know, watch your spending and watch your pennies and being careful about that. So I do think that we as parents have to be so mindful about what we do, what we say in front of our kids, because they are always, you know, they may be quiet about it, but they're always picking up those cues.
No doubt about it. Us. Right. It's also the legacy you leave behind, because whenever you're going to end up at the last day of your life, you want to look back and say, I led by example and leave the legacy. And hopefully your kids will inherit those great qualities of giving back. But we all know no one's perfect. You take the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever it might be. But, no, but I mean, that's one of the wonders of life is how you really can impact others. I have to ask, did your brother's team beat the Hurricanes? And how did it turn out?
I mean, you know, I wish I remembered that piece of it. I just remember the relentless chanting in the backyard.
And so you saw your parents and how they were givers. Even though they were busy, they understood that. So when did you start to, you know, give back and realize, hey, you know, I got to do my thing to help others?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So
I want to time out. Occasionally, there's really good ones that come. You might want to look at the clock right there. It took about 15 minutes. That's good.
That was a great question, Doc.
Thank you. Carry on.
So I would say it really goes back to, you know, I was busy with my professional life, worked in newspapers and magazines and then corporate communications, had, you know, two great kids. But it really started when my daughter Elena was on her recreation soccer team. And this is going back, she's now 25. So this is going back when I think she was in second grade, maybe, or even first grade. I don't remember the exact year. But anyway, they had a team coach, and then they needed a team manager.
And what town is this?
This is in Mendham.
Oh, right in Mendham. Yeah,
this is in Mendham. I was already in Mendham. We moved there when she was 2 years old. So I've been there actually 23 years this month. Yeah. So anyway, so they needed a team manager. And back in the day, you'd send around an email. There were no texting and group chats and, you know, apps, whatever that you have now. And so nobody responded to the email that they were going to be the manager. And I thought, okay, as busy as I am with work, I'll do this, right? Again, so again, stepping up. So I sent back a note, sure, I'll be the team manager. And it ended up being a season where as team manager, you were supposed to just help make sure everybody knew when practices were, if there was going to be a team photo, that everybody showed up, you know, just that sort of management stuff. Not coaching, because I never played soccer, don't know much about soccer, although later I did coach at the team. team. So anyway, I guess I did a pretty good job, because at the end of the season, the coach happened to be on the Westmore Soccer Club board, and he reached out to me and he said, you did such a great job managing the team. You're so organized and diligent, and you took it really seriously, and we had a great season. I don't know how much we won, but we had a good season. Kids had fun. He said,
Can I just stop you right there?
Absolutely.
You know, people get caught up in winning and losing. But you just said something that's also striking. I use the word striking occasionally when I really hear something really, I think, important. The fun. The kids have to have fun. Everybody wants to win or lose, but the kids need fun. So, and that was just, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
I'm a bit
no,
of a
no,
role,
of course
but so. I love the fact that you remember, it didn't matter the wins or loss, especially at such a young age, because everybody gets so, you know, caught up. We got to win. Yeah. We got to kill the other team.
Yeah.
And they lose sight of that. So that's wonderful. So they obviously recognize your commitment. I got to digress briefly.
Yeah,
so your mom, who was, you know, volunteering at the local library with doing inventory, I remember as a young kid, we had those old card catalogs, and they used to be like, talk about like a puzzle, trying to find that book or whatever, and you would go through. The kids now, these young whippersnappers, don't understand it. I'm guilty too as a lawyer. We used to have shepherd-eyed stuff. Now we just Google stuff.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Very
right?
different.
I just wanted it popped into my brain.
The old card catalog. Yeah, that's right.
The old
right.
card catalog.
Yeah. And it was at my brother's school, by the way, in case my mom listens to this. And
I
was like, wait a second. It wasn't the public library.
Well, God bless.
Her memory is better than mine.
No, you have a very good
memory. That's on the record.
So the Westmore Soccer understood your commitment, your passion, your giving back. So what happened next?
Yeah. So you know what? And again, so As far as stepping up, I'll just throw this out, because a lot of times people think, oh my gosh, they want me to do something. How much of a time commitment is going to be? Is that going to be? And what do I really have to do there? And I always say to people, look, just dip a toe in it. Right? You don't have to go in 100% maybe initially, but go to a meeting, see what it's like, check it out. So with Westmore Soccer, initially I was sort of like, oh, do I really want to do this? And I was told, you show up for meetings, you're not going to have to do that much, right? Well, at the first meeting, they go around the room and they start asking, you know, who wants to do, you know, finance, who wants to do whatever, getting sponsorships or teams, what have you, who wants to do the field management. And I thought, oh, okay, that doesn't sound like it could be too bad. I don't know much about the game, so perhaps I could do that. So I raised my hand. Well, that ended up being one of the bigger jobs, unbeknownst to me. And so what the field management was working with the towns and making sure that the fields were ready for play. If it rained the night before, going out and inspecting fields, getting the fields lined, and then throughout the season, making sure the lines were kept up as well. And so it was a bit of a coordination job, but it was also fun because the satisfaction you got out of, you know, seeing dozens of teams out there and hundreds of kids. And I think still is, the biggest sports program in the Mendham's, and it's Westmore Soccer, so Chester as well. But it was a great level of satisfaction over seeing a positive program for the kids and the parents coming out, and just about every little kid tries soccer, right? If they do no other sport, they pretty much all try soccer because it's pretty easy to just kick a ball and chase it. And so it was a really great time. And then from that is how things sort of evolved. So I was on the board for a while. And then a opening came up on the Township Recreation Commission. And, you know, these things sort of build. So someone suggested, oh, what do you think about volunteering for recreation and, you know, putting your hat into that? And again, I was a little bit hesitant, like, oh, do I really want to do that? And again, I was told, oh, it's not that much work. This is how people pull me into things. Oh, it won't be that much. So I said, okay, sure. Township Recreation, I guess they look after the beach and programs. And sure, I don't really know anybody involved with that, but meet a new group of people. And at the time, I don't know if you know Daryl Brewster, but his family was in town for a long time. And the, you know, the kids were very involved with sports, et cetera. And so he was the chair at that point. And so I showed up for a meeting and you know, just a really warm, welcoming. Daryl is, and just the whole group. And it was very hands-on. It was a lot of fun, you know, making sure Brookside Beach was in good shape for the summer and trying to come up with different programs.
Yeah, you have the shirt, the Brookside, New Jersey.
Brookside. 4th of July parade.
2018. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. This is vintage here, this shirt.
Not long ago, but yeah, it's nice stuff.
4 years
ago. So anyway, but you got so involved, and you talked about, you know, for the listeners, you know, you got to take that step forward.
Yep.
Whether or not that's your thing or not, you don't know until you try.
Exactly.
Right? So you started with soccer, then you're getting into recreation, like more in a global way. And how far did you go in the recreation department in Mendham?
Yeah, no, that another good question.
Now that was good. We're building momentum. I like momentum. If I get a good question every 5 minutes,
all right,
the ratings
they start to jump up.
I hope so.
So I was on the Recreation Commission working with a terrific group of people and our rec coordinator at that time, who worked for the town director, was Gene Montemorano, who's wonderful. That's back when we started the Patriots race. I don't know if you've ever done that in town.
You know, I have to digress again because I was out at one of my friends' play, beautiful place, and another great friend of mine, Dave, was running in the 5K recently.
Yes.
And he was regaling me with his rigorous regimen building up to the race.
Yeah.
And I had to tell him, I had to break the news. I have to do this show here Sunday morning at 9 live, or I would love to come out, put a pair of sneakers on.
Yes, that was
He didn't believe me. He was, are you doing a show? I said, yeah, I'm doing a show, Dave. I mean, check it out. But did you run in the race?
Yeah, so that's when now I run in the race, but back then I organized, right? And so Gene Montemorano and one of our police officers, who is no longer in town, But they had this idea of a fundraiser having a 5K race. And I really knew nothing about. At that point, I was the chair of the Recreation Commission. Daryl had cycled off and some other folks had cycled off of the commission. And so I was the chair, and Jean and the police officer and Claire Button, who's, she and Jamie are still in town. They came up with this idea of, let's organize a 5K race and it'll be a fundraiser. I had no idea how to manage it and how is this going to make money and are people going to show up? And so they convinced me, no, this is a great idea. So I said, okay, let's give it a whirl. And so we organized it, and the day of the race, you know, about 200-300 people showed up to run it. We had a kids' fun run. It was such a great event. We got sponsors. We made money. There was all this enthusiasm. So it did two things. It started a tradition that I should have worn my Patriots race shirt, actually.
You could bring a few shirts next time.
If we do this again.
I hope so.
But the tradition has continued. I think this year might have been the 13th or 14th year of it. So that's continued every year, and it's raised money for college scholarships, for Brookside Beach, for other recreation programs, and just been a home run from the beginning, not to mix the metaphors here. But it also kind of, the light bulb went off for me. I'd always played sports. I'd played in high school, basketball, softball, field hockey. I continued playing softball, you know, in adult leagues, et cetera. But even though those sports involve running, I'd never personally done a 5K or a timed race. So I thought, this is amazing. This is so much fun. And from the first person to cross the finish line to the last person who, you know, struggled to get there or even walked in, everyone's clapping and cheering. It was such a great feel-good vibe. I thought, I want to run a 5K. And so the borough, Mendham Borough, started the Harvest Hustle, which also still continues. And I trained for that race. And that was the first 5K that I did that year. And then I got very involved with doing 5K races. I was involved with the, which I'm no longer on the board of, but the Crohn's Colitis Foundation of New Jersey, and started running half marathons and fundraising for them. So
half marathon,
that's a big undertaking. Yeah, you don't just wake up and say, I think I'm going to do a half marathon today. You really do have to build
up. You know, growing up, I used to watch the New York City Marathon, Boston Marathon. And it was the beauty of the fans, just like at the end of the race. I mean, there are people barely moving to get over the line. But I love the spirit, the never quit mentality. Yeah. To me, I mean, there's some runners out there. Oh, my God. Like in Mendham, you have the Mendham Magic. They have these feeder programs. I mean, there's some kids that are extraordinarily gifted runners. But it's also just regular folks just getting it done. You know, the commitment doesn't matter if you're doing, you know, 100-yard dash, whatever. Yeah. As long as you put your hat in the race and you're doing your thing. I didn't realize, I'm going to have to ask my buddy who did compete recently. I hope you beat the guy. He's a little bit cocky. He's a little bit like you.
I'm guessing he beat me.
He's like, Todd, if you show up, I got you. Now, I'm not like, you know, I'm not really a runner like in terms of doing like 5Ks. But when someone says I can't do it, I'm like, that motivates me.
Yeah.
But that's wonderful. So in terms of your role with the recreation department, you were like the commissioner, right?
I was chair. Yes. I was on the commission.
I like saying the word commissioner.
Sounds good. The commissioner, right?
Yeah.
Now, there were a few of us. Diane Tolley was another one. I'm very well. Buzzy Thomas, Claire Button, Megan Sager, Jane Ikeda, Ann Van Voorhees. We had a really great, I'm probably forgetting somebody, but we had a really great group of people.
These are volunteers.
All volunteers. In fact, someone said to me, I was down at the beach one day doing something, and they said to me, oh, do you work for the rec department? I said, no. I said, this is something I do because I love our community. Brookside Beach is a great asset. And I just, you know, I do this of my own volunteerism. I will say one of the things I'm proudest of, going back to, I think it was around 2015, there was a push with our township committee to perhaps shut down Brookside Beach. And there were some questions about, is the beach making money? And so they asked the Recreation Commission to come in and present and talk about the beach. And you know, I think we made a really strong case. I know we did, that even if the beach, which it now makes money, but even if it's just breaking even, or maybe it costs the town a little bit of money, it's such a great asset. It's a place for young families to go, and you know, whatever your age is, but a lot of young families go there with the little kids, wade in the water, build a sandcastle. You know, the teenagers, it's their first jobs for a lot of them, being a lifeguard there, working the concession stand. It's a great asset. And so even, again, if you're losing a little money, it's given that intangible back to the town. And so we managed to keep it open.
No, I've been there. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So we're going to come back in 30 seconds with Amalia Duarte, and we're going to continue this journey of volunteerism.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
Welcome back. We're here with Amalia Duarte, a relentless volunteer. And we were just talking about Brookside Beach and all the different volunteers that come together to make sure that kind of asset's available for everyone to enjoy. And as I was just saying right before the break, I've been there with our family.
Yep.
And it's a little gem. It's tucked away a little bit. I've jumped in there off the dock, and it was a little scary.
You know,
it's not like the water at Turks and Caicos.
Right.
Wonderful though, but there's a beach, the lifeguard. It's really a cute little place. So we talked, about your volunteerism and basketball. Now I want to talk about a little hoops.
Sure.
Now, were you involved also in giving back to basketball?
Yes, that's another area I got involved with. So again, with my daughter, might have been the next year after that, she wanted to sign up for the recreation, basketball. And so I had signed her up for the program, and then they couldn't find someone to run the clinic for the girls. So a friend of mine reached out to me, and her daughter also was interested in playing on the clinic. And she reached out to me and she said, "We can't find someone to run the girls' clinic. And if we don't find somebody, they're going to merge the girls with the boys." And she said, "And I know my daughter's not going to do it." And I said, "Yeah, probably my daughter's not going to do it." She goes, "Yeah, none of the girls are going to do it."
What age is this?
This is going back to, my memory's a little fuzzy. I want to say second, maybe third grade.
Right.
So right around that time when the kids are starting off with sports. And again, I think you need your own space. So the girls were going to need their space. The boys needed their space, right? I think at that stage, having, you know, the separate leagues make sense. I don't know how they run things now, but that's how they did it back then. So she reached out to me and she goes, "Hey, you know, would you be interested in running the girls' clinic? I know you played in high school," which I did. In
what
fact,
what position you play, Mom?
I was a point guard.
Look at you!
In the day.
I mean, I don't want to show off for the listeners, but I can dribble a ball and I can throw from downtown. I mean, I can make a little noise.
Awesome!
But I love the point guard. You're like the general out there. I'm sorry, I get
no. That's okay. And I will tell you, my claim to fame is that my son, I went to Okanagan, which is a private school.
Sure, in Summit.
My sophomore year. The team that I was on, the varsity team at Oakdale, we won the state independent girls league championship, and we were the first team at Oakdale to win a state championship.
Wow.
So shout out to all my basketball teammates back in the day.
How would you characterize your game? Were you like scrappy? I mean, what was your game?
You know what? I was a defense. I was at the time very quick.
Yeah.
And I was able to sort of read where the pass was going and then grab it or knock it down. And
crafty
so,
out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like a pest out there.
Right, pretty much.
Did the coach say, "You go after that ball like a lunatic"?
I kind of just did.
That's fun. No, I last show I had Dave Popkin on, wonderful sportscaster for the Seton Hall basketball team. You know, the Pirates making some noise.
Yeah.
Shaheen Holloway is now back there. He's going to, you know, the new head coach, and he took the Peacocks really deep in the NCAA. So it was pretty remarkable run he had. But, you know, we were talking a little bit about basketball. So I always love, whenever I can digress on the show about basketball, I have to take a liberty. It's my show. I can kind of go a little bit out there in left field. But, no, I love basketball. So
not to overstate my skills. So I played on a team with some great players, because if any of them watch this later and they say, "Wait a second."
That's That's fine. Take a liberty. Take a liberty. Liberty, 4th of July.
There you go.
It's a free country.
Yeah.
You can say what you want. There's always ramifications later, though. So, and we're going to get to that when talking about just, not that we're a political show, but talk a little bit about, you know, speech and stuff like that. But, so, you did some coaching then, right?
Yes. So I got pulled into that. I said, sure, I'll run the program. And we had a great time. We had a really good time. And then again, you know, your name gets on that list of, oh, okay, ran the girls rec program. So the next year, oh, do you want to be a coach? And so then I got into coaching recreation basketball with my daughter on the team. And, you know, we always just had a great time. That was one of the things I always wanted to emphasize, like I said earlier. Because when you look back on these programs, and even I mentioned like my high school team, I remember when we won that championship, but what I really remember is all the good times that we had. And I'm still friends with women that I played basketball with back in the day. So that's what I wanted to instill with the players. And my high point of the season was always when the kid who had the least skills, you know, not the best dribbler, maybe never even handled a basketball, scored a point or made a great pass or just did something where you got excited, they got excited. And then the coolest part, you'd look across the gym and you'd see their mom and dad, you know, the eyes wide open, like, wow, my daughter just scored. Like, they couldn't even believe it. So I made it fun. I loved at the end of the season when, you know, I'd get the thank you from the parents or the beginning of the next season when I get a call from a parent, can you try to get my daughter on your team? And I'd say, well, I can't promise, but I will try. And I just kept it fun. We'd get to the gym and I wouldn't start with, you know, let's do drills, let's do plays. It was like, all right, 15 minutes, put on some music, you know, just free shooting. Here's a bunch of basketballs, run around, get your energy out.
Well, I got to use a little basketball.
Yeah.
I remember we did a little pre-interview.
Yeah. You know?
The boom box.
All right. You got it.
So you got the whole,
absolutely.
The little enthusiasm going. That's nice.
Yes. Yeah.
It's beautiful. You know, I was coaching Special Olympics basketball for 20 plus years with Coach Lombardi,
nice.
Sweet Lou Ferrari, you know, so many, Tom Abezia, you know, Bart. I mean, wonderful, wonderful people. And, I love what you touched on. When I started, many years ago, I got caught up in winning and losing too much. I was like just a little bit like too involved in the X's and O's.
Yeah.
And then I realized, I'm like, this is Special Olympics hoops.
Yeah.
The light bulb took a while, but it went on. But I loved the moment when the player with the most disabilities would somehow put herself in position, not really my great coaching, maybe a little bit of it, but I would say to everyone, you got to get this girl the ball. I don't care how you do it. Yeah. She's getting the ball. But you know what the beauty of it was? The other team also recognized that. And that's Special Olympics sports. That's the beauty of sports. It's very pure with Special Olympics. And when that young lady made a basket, I remember this 20-some years ago, it gives me goosebumps because I looked across. I saw her parents. And I saw the joy on their face because she was being treated as an equal. That's the beauty of sport. But the beauty of what you were doing. And I bet you, if you ask your players that you were blessed to coach, I bet you they remember the feeling you gave them of getting everybody involved. It wasn't the importance of winning or losing.
Yeah.
It was the fun, the camaraderie. That's a blessing. So we talked a little bit about basketball. You got me all pumped up. We already did the 5K Patriots race. I was on the treadmill this morning. I told you before
next
the
year.
Shows.
Next year.
Well,
come
we
got to
figure
it
out because the audience, you know, they look forward every Sunday morning, but we'll see what we can pull off.
It's usually
there.
On a Saturday. This was different this
no,
year. We'll
this
get you next
good.
Year, Todd.
Oh, if it's Saturday, I have to come up with some excuse. But no, I'll show up there. If I can get a T-shirt, it'll be wonderful. So you're really involved in so many different things local. In getting ready for the show, you got involved with this Mendham Stigma-Free Task Force on a very serious note. I know we're having a lot of fun talking about the different volunteerism things you've done. But I know this is really important to you, is the mental health and the issues. This is the real world we live in. Doesn't matter where we are. I mean, for the listeners like Mendham, New Jersey, like a lot of affluent communities, there's problems everywhere in the world. Doesn't matter where you are. I mean, there's some real problems. And sometimes Everybody thinks they're in your ivory tower, but then you get clobbered and you realize you're like everyone else.
Yeah.
Everybody has the same kind of issues. So tell us a little bit about the Mendham's, you know, stigma task force that you were so involved in.
Yeah,
and why?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, not to pat myself on the back, I actually started the task force. So I was elected to the township committee in 2017. And then in 2018, I mentioned that my dad, you know, was a psychiatrist. So growing up, talking about mental health issues was just, you know, part of the conversation. Like if you know, your parent is a carpenter, you're going to talk about that, right? Your parent's a lawyer, maybe you talk about that. So that was something that was part of the conversation and that, you know, was just, I certainly knew about, and it wasn't something that I was fearful of or, ooh, you know, taboo, what have you. So anyway, I got elected in 2017 on the committee in 2018. And I had been thinking about different projects, different areas, you know, recreation had always been my thing in town. But I wanted to broaden and expand. And, you know, we had, sadly, our community had been touched by teen death by suicide. And so I learned about this stigma-free program that was throughout the state of New Jersey, really throughout the country. And Morris County had declared itself stigma-free. And so different communities were starting to declare themselves.
What does that mean, though, Amali? When you say stigma-free, for the listeners, what does that mean?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So what?
Hold on, another great question. But
there should be a bell here. Ding, ding, ding.
It's riveting. I mean, the listeners, I mean, this is compelling. No, but on a very serious note, because this subject obviously is a heartbreak for folks that witnessed it, and just friends and family and communities.
Absolutely.
Real when there is a teen suicide. But what does that mean when you say stigma-free?
Yeah, so what it means is kind of what I touched on earlier, that people, we want to open up the conversation to talking about mental health. So the same way that, you know, if I had walked in here with a cast or something on my arm, you would have just right away said to me, hey, what happened? Or did you get injured? Did you fall down? And we'd have a conversation about whatever happened to me that led to that, right? Or even if it's not a visible thing, maybe I'd say to you, oh, I'm not feeling so well this morning. And, you know, I'm taking a medication because, I don't know, my stomach's bothering me, what have you. So with mental health issues, we want to have that same sort of conversation where a person can go to their friend or their parent or what have you and say, I've been feeling really down lately. And it's not just because I got a bad grade on something. It's feeling more than that. Or just opening up those conversations. You know, you need to get help at points in your life. And one of the things happening with the pandemic is that the rates of anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, which is people thinking about taking their own life, has just skyrocketed. And in my stigma-free task force, I'm like the only layperson. Everyone else is pretty much involved with mental health field or some other healthcare professional. You know, their practices are overwhelmed. It's really hard to get appointments. So what stigma-free is about, it's about, let's remove that taboo. Let's talk about it.
So someone is suffering.
That's the tagline. Let's talk about it. Let's open up the conversation.
Right. So take away, if someone has a psychological issue going on, there should not be any kind of criticism if they want to come forward and seek help, because that is the only way you're going to get someone the help they need, is so that the community is open to the concept. There's nothing wrong with saying, I need help. So for the listeners, like today, for example, maybe they know a loved one, maybe themselves. There's nothing wrong with coming out and saying, look, I need help.
Right. And right? The other thing, too, that the other really important message is ask. If you think someone's going through a crisis or they're exhibiting behaviors that are not in keeping with their usual, you know, they're withdrawing from friends, they've decided they don't want to play sports or the violin or whatever they do anymore. If you notice things that are, you know, as parents, I think you see those red flags. Ask your child. And there's this myth around, if I ask my child, are you feeling a certain way? Are you thinking about, you know, harming yourself, that puts the idea in their head. It's a complete myth. And it's important to ask that question, because that might open up the valve, like, oh, yeah, actually, I am thinking about something or I need help, and having that conversation with your young person. On our website, if you go to the Mendham Township website, we do have a whole stigma-free initiative page. We have a whole page with resources and phone numbers and websites that you can contact because it's so important. But going back to when we started, so I had this idea in my mind, Mendham Borough had actually already declared themselves stigma-free. So I got the town committee to pass a proclamation that we were stigma-free. And for some towns, that's all they do. And that's a great first step. But I really wanted to take it a step further. And so I reached out to the police, who both the township and borough were immediately on board with it. And I got some volunteers and we started hosting workshops on, you know, youth mental health issues and things like that. And so we kind of had the foundation laid. Fortunately, that going into the beginning of 2020, when we did have some tragic teen deaths by suicide, one after another, that we were ready and we knew the resources. I got in touch with the Society for the Prevention of Teen Suicide, and they came up, and it was like an all hands on deck moment. We got the police, the schools, the houses of worship, you know, all of us who were part of the task force. And I remember we literally got around a table at town hall, and the head of guidance came from Mendham High School, John McGoldrick, and we had a great conversation with the Society for Prevention of Teen Suicide, Susan Talone, about what do we do. And I said, we need to have a community conversation. So we need to get people together. This has really rocked our community. And so we, you know, within weeks organized this workshop at our local little community center. And she came, and this amazing woman, Wendy Sefik, who she lost her son.
I had them on the show.
She is.
Wendy and Steve, I mean, I lost her beloved son, TJ.
Oh, my gosh. She is amazing. Yeah. I know her better than her spouse, but she's a fabulous. And what the work that they've done in that issue has just been phenomenal. So they came, and Susan came. And the community club was packed. It was literally standing room only, probably at 150, 160 people there. And they talked us through the whole topic. And I felt like you could feel the temperature in the room go from high level of anxiety, parents so nervous and worried and, oh my gosh, what do we do, to everyone sort of like zen moment, like feeling a sigh of relief and feeling, okay, we're going to get through this as a community. We're going to pull together. We're going to be stronger. We're learning, and we're going to be there for all of us and our kids. And we did get through it.
You know, I met you there because I live in town, Mendham Township, and you really hit it right on the whole community was reeling. Yeah. And beyond like a big eye opener, it wasn't just like these two tragedies back to back. These wonderful young kids took their lives, but the community pulled together, and it was an unusual feeling in there because there was a lot of pain, but there was also the community, and that goes back to why I love people like you. You're bringing the communities together for fun, but in these tragedies also to help each other out, to lift each other up, because obviously everybody wanted to come together, share their emotions, and also figure out some solutions, right? Because that's important too. It's one thing to identify a problem.
Right.
It's another to step up and do it. So, I mean, that God bless you and everybody that stands behind the stigma-free and raising awareness. I mean, it's a very, very important subject. And it, candidly, is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It never goes away, the problem. So
absolutely.
God bless you for that. I wanted to cover a few other areas. You know, you come in contact with a lot of great young kids and the different programs that you've seen firsthand with the kids and the kids giving back. You know, I always believe the kids are wonderful. Everybody, you know, not everyone. Some people bash the kids are all screwed up, but I don't believe that. I mean, there's some wonderful kids. Can you just share, you know, some of the observations you make with the kids, the connections about the wonderful young kids in the community?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'll say the cliche, the kids are all right. The kids are great. In Mendham, not to get into politics, but I've observed young people really stepping up and wanting to get involved and wanting to make a difference, and wanting their voices heard. And we've seen that on some issues that have come up in the past few years. And I feel better when I see the young people who are saying, yeah, I want to make a difference. They start their own projects in town. For example, we had the Sharing Project, which was, were a couple of kids who, you know, kind of that same timeline around beginning of 2020. They were getting their IB. They were in the IB program, International Baccalaureate, and had to do a project. And so they came up with the idea of growing vegetables for the food pantry. And it was going to be a limited project just for, you know, while they were in school.
These are young kids.
These are high school kids.
These are junior year.
And the two kids, Matt Borenstein and Matt Goldrich, they got together. And again, right before COVID, they had this idea. Well, boom, COVID hits. And so what do? They get the project going. They start growing vegetables in different gardens. You know, I know in Matt Borenstein's garden, you know, they live in Drakewick, right in their backyard, they were growing vegetables. And the thing just took off. You know, all these kids started helping them out, and, you know, other people in the community, the Rotary Club started helping them. And they've grown thousands of pounds of vegetables donated to the Chester Mendham Food Pantry. It's now an actual nonprofit. I got involved with it because they came to me looking for a permanent home and asked me to be on the board. So, I, full disclosure, I'm on the board.
What are you not on the board of, Amanda?
Well,
I mean, come on.
I do cycle off of things. I used to be on the board for Crohn's Colitis, New Jersey. Now I'm a board member emeritus or something like that. But anyway, I helped them connect with a open field that we had in Mendham where they used to play baseball. Little League wasn't using it. And so that's now going to become their permanent home. So I use it as an example of young people who, you know, they started something off. It was going to be limited. And now this is going into the next generation of kids at the high school who are involved. And they're even running a young gardeners program for little kids.
How cool is that?
So it's just, it's a great program. And I see that in our community and other communities as well. Kids giving back. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing better than that. Because, I mean, think about the kids at such a young age.
Yes.
That understand the importance of volunteerism.
Yes.
And giving back and the trajectory of their lives.
Yeah.
Because one thing I've learned as I've gotten a little bit older, try to be a little wiser, try to learn from my mistakes, or if I make a mistake, try to make it right, is I get so much more out of when I'm giving back. I don't know, my life just seems more in balance than when I'm just all caught up in working, and then my balance with my family gets all screwed up. So I feel better when at least I'm doing something to help others in need. And that's the beautiful thing about your life. So one of the things that I wanted to explore, and I mentioned a little bit, this is not a political show. I don't care you're Democratic, Republican, Independent. I don't care. That's not what the show is about.
Yep.
It's about bringing people together, people doing the good stuff in life, doing the right thing when no one's looking. I love to say that. People volunteering, doing so many wonderful things. So you were elected in, what, 2017 on the Mendham Township Democratic Committee. Putting aside the political part of it, what's it like to try to run for office? Because you're putting your hat in the ring, too. And listen, it's also, it's easy to criticize someone. It's not easy to put your hat in the ring. You're going to get muddied up. You're going to get roughed up.
Yeah.
It's the world we're living, very polarized. What was it like to ultimately be elected as a committee person?
Yeah, so you touch on a few things there. Another good question. You're on a roll. But actually, so it's the Mendham Township Committee. It's not the Democratic Committee because we're 4-1 Republican-Democrat, but with myself being the only Democrat. So that's I give folks credit who decide to run for public office because you really are putting yourself out there in your community. You're opening yourself up to criticism, to, you know, people posting on Facebook bad things about you or criticizing you. Nobody's perfect. We all make our mistakes. But I do also say to people, don't criticize. if you aren't doing anything. So voting, of course, but get involved. No matter what your beliefs are, get involved, right? And get involved with a campaign or an issue or volunteer, whatever that is. And then see if you can make a difference. Don't just, you know, sit there on your laptop and, oh, this, that, and the other thing on Facebook or exactly. Twitter. Or, you know, actually do something. You have a
problem. Get in it.
You have a concern from the, like somebody was saying something about, an issue in town. And I said, well, why don't you come to the town council meeting? Come to our meeting and talk to us about it if you're worried about that or that's bothering you. Like, don't just go on Facebook and complain about it.
You know, Tom Keeling was on recently. Tom's a wonderful guy, too. Very involved and very, very...
He's on the board of Ed, right?
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy, Tom. We dragged him on the show. He's actually a neighbor. I never met him before. I asked him about his alarm system because probably after appearing, he might have been a little nervous. No, but on a serious note, like you put your hat in the ring, you know, and that's important because a lot of people listening have feelings about whatever issues.
Sure.
But if you want to solve a problem, get involved. I mean, that's the only way to solve a problem. It's easy to be on the sidelines. It's different when you're in there and you touched on the climate, right? So the temperature in the world is everybody so polarized. And I think that's unfortunate because everybody should talk very civilly to each other. I think that's really important. So you were able to you're on the committee, right? It's a Republican and you're the only Democrat right now on it. But it's important, right, to work together, right, mm-hmm. on the issues in a civil way.
Yep.
Civilly, right. So one of the other wonderful things, Molly, when I was getting ready for the show is you recently, I think it was in May of this year, you're now the Morris County Democratic chairperson. And I understand you're the first Latina and woman, mm-hmm. and many would say long overdue. What is that like to assume that role in the Democratic Party? Putting aside the political bent of it, just to be like you're a groundbreaker, a trailblazer. What's it like?
Yeah. So again, this is one of these things where opportunity knocks. And I felt this was a really great opportunity to try to bring more people in, to try to raise awareness that there is a Morris County Democratic presence and to try to bring forward issues that are important, from a Democratic perspective. What's interesting is, you know, as people look at different parts of the state or parts of the country, there's this whole idea, red, blue, right, purple. And you look at Morris County and there's this idea that, oh, it's all the towns are red and, you know, well, I shouldn't say that a lot of towns are red Republican and the county's red. The reality is that things are a lot closer than you might think. So the registrations are a lot closer. There's a lot of independents who vote either way or don't vote at all in some cases. But anyway, what I'm interested in doing, and it gets right back into the theme of this morning's conversation, is bringing more people in to volunteer. It's all volunteerism. This is a volunteer. Being chair of Morris County Democrats is a volunteer position. You know, my e-board, which is the most diverse e-board, executive board that we've ever had, running the county party. You know, I made sure that we had people of color, that we had LGBTQ plus representation, women, of course. And so it's very diverse, the group of us. I even have a high school student who's part of the board because, you know, I want to get that youth voice out there as well. So for me, it's a chance to bring more people in, raise awareness of different issues around the environment and women's rights and a lot of that. And I know we're not going to get political, so I'll leave it at that. But, it's about volunteerism. And within all these, we have 39 towns in Morris County. Get involved in your local town, your local campaign. I met a guy yesterday in Randolph who he is a physician. He's decided to run for the council in Randolph. And he's a great guy. And we were walking the parade together for 4th of July. And he was talking to people. And he's a smart, capable, wonderful individual. And I hope he gets elected, of course, because he's a Democrat, but also because he's clearly, you know, incredibly qualified and loves his community.
So, right. And you love the community, Amalia. So did you ever think from all the years of volunteerism, you now have an important role, right, with the Democratic committee, the chairperson right here in Morris County. You ever think you'd be in that position? And what are your thoughts? Did you ever envision that?
Honestly, no. I mean, when I think back on where things were for me, let's say, you know, 2014, 2015, when I was involved with recreation and you know, working, et cetera, raising the kids, I really was an apolitical person in the sense that, you know, I wasn't an activist. I hadn't thought about running for the township committee. That really wasn't on my, you know, bucket list. So this has just evolved as things have evolved politically. And, you know, like everything we've talked about this morning, opportunity knocks, people look to me and I said, okay, yeah.
You know, it's so wonderful, Molly, your commitment to the community. And once again, you are a relentless volunteer. It's such an honor for you to come on the 4th of July to think about how your late dad, who immigrated to our great country, your mom must be so proud of your effort. You know, I'm proud that you're my friend now, that you're such a wonderful person, caring person. For the listeners, you can always get involved. Amalia is a great example of, instead of being on the sideline, try something, whatever it might be. It could be anything in life that really you're into. Give it your best shot. I want you to remember this 4th of July, all the freedoms we have. Never take it for granted. Please tune in next Sunday to The Journey of Giving Back. Have a blessed and incredible 4th of July weekend. Take care.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.